I don't want a scandal breaking out. Well-known podcasters.
I would love a scandal to break out. Are you kidding?
Do you just want to be a drama podcast?
Let's get a total beef going.
Welcome to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast, your classic turn one play. My name is Matt.
I'm Amy.
And as always, we're going to start off with our sing together portion of this podcast in 3, 2. That was good. I think that was our best one yet.
It was perfect.
Okay, so we just had a new set come out, right? And I haven't played very much. I haven't played very much with the new cards.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know, it leads me to think about the game in a different way when a brand new set comes out and the only thing that I have to use those cards in are local events. I think that there are instances where I get a little uninspired by local events, you know? At the end of the set 6 metagame, I was just kind of, you know, after the set championships, I was just kind of messing around. I was playing whatever, not really taking it seriously. But with a new set, I feel as though I should be taking it seriously. We have set championships coming up again, and so I feel like I should practice for those. But set championships don't really feel, I don't want to say that they feel unimportant, but they don't feel like something that I have to like prep for in the same way that like a DLC would. You know, when you and I were getting ready to go to Atlanta and go to Vegas, I remember we looked at the calendar and we were like, holy crap, there is only 7 local tournaments that we can go to before we leave for the DLC. And that kind of shook me a little bit. Because that didn't feel like a lot of time to practice in a real tournament setting, you right. know?
And I think that was when I went to my first tournament without you, because
right.
there were so few opportunities. I was like, wait a second, right. you can't go to this one? I have to go.
Right. I think I was like traveling for work or something.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't able to make the weekly event. But so local tournaments are kind of in a weird spot for me. You know, set 7 just came out. I don't have all of the cards for it yet. I don't really know what I want to be playing. And I think you and I have talked about this before, where we're not good deck creators. We're more good gardeners of decks.
Pruning.
You know,
we're
able to take kind of like the shell of a list and modify it pretty well depending on what we expect the metagame to be at any individual tournament. And so with no legitimate sanctioned bigger events, it's hard to know how this meta is going to shape out. It's hard to know kind of what the metagame is going to be. And I think a lot of people are excited for that type of thing, except you know, you get people complaining about net decking, which can be its own episode. But I think
you're gonna just drop a word. I don't know.
Here's a spoiler alert for episode 4. Okay. As an aside, net decking is the act of going onto the net and finding a deck list. Oh. Have you heard of the net? The World Wide Web?
Hey.
Anyway, all's that to say is I really hope that they announce DLCs pretty soon for this year. I also hope, as kind of a general, as a general thing, I really want more events that are somewhere between set championships and DLCs.
Yeah, we've somewhere between set championships. Or seriousness?
Yes. Yes, in both size and seriousness.
Well, okay, so we've got, you know, weekly store, you know, weekly games. Obviously, that's the intro level. Or I would
put that, playing at, you know, home, like,
is intro.
Yeah, I was gonna, I wasn't even gonna do like kitchen table, but if you wanted to, like, if you wanted to build a ladder of the events that we do have, we have bottom rung, and not in terms of quality. Please don't come at me, people. But in terms of competitiveness, we have bottom rung, kitchen table, you and your sister, playing at home at the kitchen table, right? The next rung up would be like a league at a local store where it's unstructured. You walk in, you see who's there, and you play them for fun, and you get like the stickers.
Oh, okay. So not even like structured in stores. You're talking like the
right,
just show up, play whoever's there. Got it.
Right, exactly. Then the next run up would be like the local tournaments where it's, you know, it's a tournament. You come in at a set time. It's, you know, 6:30 start. Okay, everybody's loaded into Melee. Load up pairings. Here's three rounds. And, you know, they pay out in booster packs or store credit or whatever, right? The next rung after that, I would consider store championships. Maybe not the first store championship. You know, getting that stitch came out and it was like $1,500 or whatever. And so people were taking that very, very seriously. And then, you know, ever since then, the value of the promo has gone down to the point where, it still is one rung higher than locals, but I think that the distance between it has actually kind of closed a little bit. It's still a unique prize that you won't be able to get, you know, at your random local tournament. So it is one step higher. But then we have this huge gap from set championship to DLC. And then after DLC, you have Continentals. And then after Continentals, you have Worlds. But I feel like there's so much room in between set championship and DLC for multiple different rungs on this ladder. And we just don't have that right now.
So the first set championship, the stitch, as you mentioned, that probably, if it had remained at that level, probably would be the step below, right? Because that's pretty intense. But with where it has settled, it ends up not being nearly as an impressive competitive event.
Yeah. So, for now, I am only talking about Ravensburger sponsored events, right? Okay. We'll get into something else. We'll get into the alternatives in a second, but I think you're right that if the set championships had remained, I don't know, as prestigious as the first one was, I think that that probably would have been a nice even spacing.
Do you think that's any of the intent behind the changes to the set championships going forward with like the single mat just for the champion.
Maybe.
The fact that now everybody is getting participation.
If it had remained at the stitch levels, I think it would have been nice, even spacing, even going so far as to say the step up from locals to set champ might have been too big of a step. You'll notice that I have now switched the metaphor from a ladder to a staircase. If it had remained at the stitch level, maybe it would have been too big of a step from your random Tuesday tournament up to set championships, right? I think the introduction of participation promos, the expansion of the promos from top four to top eight, the change in promos, and I don't know if this was intentional, but the change in playability of the promos, making them not quite as sought after, and the addition of the participation promos, I think that all signals an intent from Ravensburger to say the gap between locals and set championship should be way smaller.
It does seem like they're struggling to find the level that they want it to land at, right? Because first it's super high, like and then they're like, okay, wait.
Feels like they overshot, right?
Yeah, and so they pull it back, and give out more prizes. Okay, yeah, that. But then everybody like aren't that impressed, and so they're like, okay, let's notch it up a little bit. And so as far as like the participation, I think of that less as like, and here's something for everybody, it's not that big of a deal, as like, that's very similar to the DLC, where everybody who came, if they stayed through three rounds, got a dragon fire. That feels to me like they're trying to make it more like the DLC.
It's interesting. I kind of have the opposite take, because those Dragonfire promos held a certain value.
They did, that's true. Because
they were only acquirable. They were geographically locked, right? And the quantities were way lower. The participation promos are 40 per store, and I don't know how many stores there are, but there are, I mean, hundreds at a minimum, right?
Yeah, I see what you're saying for sure. I guess we're probably talking different points here, where you're talking about the seriousness of the event, and I'm just saying I think that they're trying to mirror DLCs a little bit more.
Yeah, no, and that's probably true. One aspect that I forgot that I think also plays into, I'm going to use the word diluting. I don't really mean that in a negative way. I just mean bringing set championships further down, closer to the local events. You know, it's become a glorified local event, was the change from having it spread over, what was it, 4 days initially versus an entire month.
Oh,
so now
sure.
It's 8 days, right?
Yeah,
it's an entire month of events. I guess it was 6 days, wasn't it? Because they could host them on Fridays.
Yeah, Friday,
initially.
Saturday,
it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
So it's not as big of a leap, but they do add two additional days.
Somebody definitely hosted one on either a Thursday or a Monday. I wonder if that was unauthorized.
Oh yeah, I think you're totally right. I think there was like a random one that was like, well, it's Tuesday at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
I don't know that I can make it out there in time.
Right.
You know, I feel like you're right. I don't remember specifically, but I think you might be right. But, you know, restricting it, man, that's a really good point, because if the rules for the Stitch championship were, you know, like, anytime within this 2-week period, you can host the event for this very valuable card. And now the rule is you have to host it on a Saturday or Sunday throughout, you know, the month of May or whatever. Restricting it to weekends does signal a level of prestige that the local events don't have, right? So that's interesting. But then also, like, I think introducing promos to everybody, extending the promos from top 4 to top 8, and intentional or not, maybe not putting in the most format defining promo, I think signals the opposite, where they signal this is not an event for you to go to if you're just looking to make money. So I, you know, it would have been so easy for them to say, hey, top 8 promos for the set championship for this set is Tamatoa.
Right.
You know, and instead they did, hey, look at this cool new card. This cool dual ink card. Isn't this neat? Don't know if it's going to be meta relevant, but it sure does look cool. And that is their promo. So I don't know what their intention is.
On the other hand, sometimes I do get a bit of an impression that they don't know what's going to be popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah. Again, another topic. Like, that could be its own episode.
Yeah. I'm not sure that they would go for Tamatoa in any case, but, like, I don't know that they knew, like, what the top 5 most popular cards were going to be.
Yeah. I mean,
and then they always want it to be a character, right? Tamatoa was pretty freaking pushed.
Yeah. Tamatoa is so pushed as a card that how could they not have known that that was going to be the $60+ legendary that it ended up being? Like,
could be right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. Like, who's planning the set championships? Maybe they're looking at the art. And they're like, this card is beautiful, or we just introduced a Big Hero 6, although we didn't, but, you know, whatever.
Right.
And let's lean into that. So,
well, I mean, it was probably the Duel Ink, right? Duel Ink was the big thing for this set. And so, and, you know, it's totally possible that it's the marketing team who's responsible for that, and then, like, the play design team is responsible for what cards get made. I think that should all be categorized under, like, the organized play division, but I don't know how they're structured, so yeah. Maybe. Regardless, I just know that the way that set championships have presented themselves, what they have become, leaves me wanting for something bigger. And it is the lack of events, of sponsored events in between a set championship and a DLC, leaves it up to the community to fill in those gaps, which I think is great. And I really like the response that the community has had. I know locally we have been, like, locally, the community here has been coming together and being like, hey, guys, let's do a 1K. Let's do a win a box. Let's do a win a case, you know? And I think that that's amazing. And that's exactly the type of event that I'm looking for. And even not locally, you know, you and I mentioned that we watched the SSG stream. And that was, like, I think it was advertised as a 10-case tournament. And,
yeah.
But then it ended up giving out just, like, so much more than that. And
oh yeah, they had all these, like, side things they were doing, and side events.
Yeah, side events. But, yeah. They had bounties on their employees. Yes. You know, like, I don't, crazy. And I'm jealous that for the first time I'm jealous that I don't live in the Florida area. But that's so cool. And, you know, like this weekend, there's a tournament in Wisconsin. Like there's two back-to-back 5Ks, which is super cool. And so I really like that the community is being like, all right, well, if they're not going to do it for us, we're just going to host these bigger tournaments. And I mean, give out the only thing that we can give out, which is money and cards, you know?
After set championships, these past set championships, I think I would have been like, okay, well, you know, this set is pretty well done. Let's get these new cards. But instead, we had a 1K. I mean, it was great to have another thing to be heading to.
Yeah. Well, and this one was weird. The distance between set 6 and set 7 was like the longest gap because they changed their release schedule. And then the distance between set 7 and set 8 is like super short, especially after an extended, you know, it feels super short. Yeah. But you know, it was nice. I was talking to a store owner the other day when I was picking up a box of Arcasia's Island, and he was like, every time, you know, when a new Lorcana set comes out, I'm surprised that so many people come in to get it because I hear nothing about this game during that lull. And I don't know that he actually plays, but the lull he's talking about is the lull after set championships, but before a new set releases. And he says that, you know, like tournament attendance drops and nobody, you know, you have the main core people show up to play. But it's way less than when a new set drops. And it's way less than when we're practicing for DLCs or there are set championships to go to. And so it's that lull that feels ripe for opportunity for something else. So I don't know what that something else would be. I'm imagining something like a regional DLC. DLCs are already kind of regional to begin with, right? But I'm kind of hoping for something that is more local than a DLC, but not a DLC, if that makes any sense. I think it would be very cool if your set championship qualified you to something. You know, getting a certain spot at a set championship could also qualify you to like an invitational. Like that would be very neat.
State.
That too. I mean, Magic has states.
Yeah, I'm going back to like high school choir and like right. there's local and then there's state and then there's, I don't even know if anything goes after that because I just went to state.
What's that community joke about Glee Club where it's just like, well, after this, we got regionals, and after regionals, we have super regionals, and after super regionals, we have bicontinentals,
and so on forever and ever.
Forever, or else I'm going to have to crash another bus, or whatever he said. Anyway, this is the community podcast now. This is the community rewatch podcast.
Yes.
So, DLCs, right? DLCs have not started again. We have had one season that started last May, I believe. And when it was originally announced, they were like, hey guys, we're going to be putting on these DLCs. They are going to be capped at 512 players. And we are going to host, I don't know how many they had. They had like 10 in North America, right? And then they had 6 abroad, I think. There's Chicago, Fort Worth, Atlanta, Toronto, Seattle, Las Vegas. I think that's 6 in North America. Maybe there were 4 abroad, which brought it up to 10 total. And then they added one in Australia. Anyway, originally announced they were going to be 512 players. And tickets went on sale for Atlanta and Lille, I think. Was the first one in Europe. I think that was on the same weekend as Atlanta.
Yep.
And immediately sold out. Like within seconds, right? People were very upset because everybody was very excited. They wanted to go, especially to the first one. I was very on board with people, you know, I was commiserating with people. I'm like, yeah, man, like that was really tough. I got a ticket, so I was pretty happy.
I was waitlisted.
You were waitlisted. That's fine too, because I had a ticket. And then they came out and they were like, hey guys, we hear you. Hold on, give us a minute. And then they came back a couple weeks later and they said, okay, great. We have raised the cap on all of the DLCs. Some of them more than others, because, you know, we have these event spaces. Atlanta went from 500 players to 2,000 players, over 2,000 players. I think Chicago went up to 1,000. And, like, all of the DLCs either went to 1024 or 2048, right? Let me tell you, I really enjoyed both of the DLCs that we got to go to. Those tournaments were not designed for 1,000 to 2,000 players. And I think people forget that they were originally designed for 500 players, because there's a lot of criticism that people could and should give the DLCs and how they were run. I don't think the criticism about the cut rate from day one to day two, or about the facilities or the structure, you know, I don't know that those are entirely fair, because it was originally supposed to be a 500 person tournament and some of them quadrupled in size. So 9 rounds of Swiss on day one, cut to top 64, is a 3% conversion rate, which is a ridiculously low threshold. That is so low that it is kind of infuriating that is the first hurdle that you have to cross. And then you have to do day two, a top 64 best of three single elimination bracket. Is kind of ridiculous. 9 rounds with 500 people and a cut to top 32. What's that percentage?
It's 6%.
So all of a sudden, you've doubled your percentage, right? You've doubled your conversion rate. I don't know what season two of the DLCs is going to hold. Some people are thinking, or some people are hoping, that there isn't a cap on the DLCs. And I don't know how they would do that. I don't know.
You can't get a space without having some limit. And if you think about the spaces that they used, like, those were, I mean, at least the ones we went to were big spaces. Half of the space was used for side events.
Right. Yeah, we were not using the full thing for the main event.
But I don't think people would be happy if the side events didn't exist.
No. No. The side events have to exist in order to make it worth it at all to go. Because, again, you know, 3%... 97% of competitors are not making it to day two. If you're going to one of these events, you have to plan on being that 3%. So that means you're there for the weekend, you know? So you have to have side events. I don't know how you can do an uncapped tournament. And I get that it's a feel bad for when you don't get a ticket to some one of these events and you really want to go and you really want to play. I don't think it's realistic for everybody to be able to attend the DLCs who want to under the current system. Instead, what you could do is, in order to fill in that gap in between set championships and DLCs, bring DLCs down a little bit into that gap so that there's not as much space.
That level above set championship.
Yeah, right there, you know, we you know, that area above set champ but below the current DLC. There's this kind of void. So now, you know, you can have a Denver or a Salt Lake City. You could have a more East Coast one. You could have Phoenix and maybe something in California. Maybe something else in the Midwest, like Des Moines or like Kansas City, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And Europe, I'm so sorry. I don't know your geography, but, you know, expand the number that you have there as well and spread them out so that people are going to their most local one, probably. You make them all a 500 cap, like the DLCs were intended to be. But what you do is you have them all take place on the same weekend, and you do it multiple times a year.
Okay.
So you would have, you know, last year we had the one in Atlanta in May. So maybe you do one of these circuits or these seasons or whatever you want to call them of 10 to 12 DLCs. You do that in May all across the country. And then 2 months, 3 months later, whatever, you do it again. If you do 10 DLCs that have a 500 person cap, that is 5,000 people that get an opportunity to go to one of these DLCs. Whereas before, you had one DLC that 1,000 to 2,000 people had an opportunity to go to.
Hey, that's more people.
And so if you do, let's say, three of them a year, we're already at 15,000 people that get an opportunity to go. Whereas before, we were at what? Maximum of 12,000?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And not even that, because some of them were only capped at 1,000.
Yeah. So 10,000, whatever.
Yeah. So we've already increased the number of people who could go over the course of a year and made the tournament a little bit better by lowering the number of competitors that are there. So now you have that 6% that we talked about before, and you've made it more local. So not everybody has to travel around as far as they may have before. It does lower the prestige, I think, a little bit when you do that. But I think it also kind of ups the excitement, not just because so many more people get an opportunity to go, but you know that all around the world, everybody is doing it that week.
Yeah, that is exciting.
Like, isn't that really cool?
Although that leans heavily on their new app, right?
Yeah.
Because
that's true. Because
we know from Atlanta that Melee couldn't handle two massive tournaments at the same time.
But wasn't Vegas? So, didn't Vegas also have a second DLC happening? Melee was not the issue in Vegas. Vegas had other issues going on, but I think maybe the time zones played a factor in that. I think Lille during Atlanta maybe overlapped more than Vegas.
I think it actually did. Yeah, I think it actually did, because I remember, like, it was the earlier, right, that really had problems, and it kind of settled down.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Interesting. So let's see. Right now, we're looking at six DLCs a year. With your method, we're talking probably 30?
Yeah. Something like that.
Definitely more expensive for Ravensburg.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I don't know anything about, like, event planning or logistics. I'm sure that it would end up being more expensive. You do get the benefit of not having to have as much event space, you know, like if you know that it's going to be a 500 person cap, you can, well, I mean, think about Atlanta. They had to change the venue from when they thought they were going to do a 500 person event to when they were doing a 2000 person event. I can't imagine that was a cheap change. I imagine just the cost of doing one of these events is going to outweigh, or it's going to be more expensive than any savings that you might get, you know, but it may not be that much more expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it is, then I think we'd see it in the ticket cost, which honestly, personally, I thought that the event was kind of cheap for what it was. You know?
I mean, I think the price of the ticket was never the gatekeeper to the event. It was really just trying to get a ticket.
Yeah, so there's some room there for adjustment if they need to.
Yeah, for sure. So I think you keep the same structure. You know, we can talk about, you know, two game format, cut to top 32, single elimination, whatever. But keep the same format in terms of like the certain number of people at each of these DLCs qualify to the continental tournament, right? probably have to lower the number. I think it's top eight right now, maybe top four, maybe finalists. But you know, you lower the number because it's easier to get to, more people are going to be getting to it. And you have a higher, you know, there's a higher conversion rate, but I think it does bridge that gap that we have between our current set championships and our current DLCs. And that doesn't even preclude, you know, something like states that we were talking about before from existing. We could have another tournament, you know, if we just create a tournament from scratch, we could have states take up the rest of that empty space to go locals, set championships, states, regional DLCs, continentals, worlds. And I think that that's a very clean ladder. Even if, you know, I don't know, like states doesn't have to relate to the DLC in any way. It could just kind of end at states. Although I think it would be cool if maybe the winner of each state automatically got a ticket to the DLC and they don't have to do like, they don't have to rush to buy a ticket. But just the existence of a new type of tournament would, you know, bridge that gap. Do I think they're going to do this? No. No, I do not. But that is one way.
Well, good. I mean, they're constantly, I don't know if this is true. They have posted positions. Maybe you should just get in there and get it done.
Yeah. I mean,
you have organizing experience, right?
Yeah. I'm an expert at that, actually. Ravensburger, call me. I have really good ideas. Yeah. The problem is that I have to get a divorce if I move to Seattle. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, what's more important to you, I guess?
So speaking of events, speaking of bigger events, but not necessarily bigger events, I really want to play more limited. You and I have played a little bit of limited almost exclusively at the DLCs, right? So when we were in Atlanta, we did the starter deck event.
Oh, yeah.
And we also did a sealed event. And then in Vegas, collectively, you and I did three or four sealed events, right?
Yeah.
So that's one way of doing a limited event, is a sealed event where you get a certain number of packs, you open them up, you organize them, you make a deck, and then you play with that deck. That's a limited event because it's the opposite of a constructed event where you construct your own deck and bring that to a tournament. Most tournaments are constructed, but you do get some limited tournaments as well. The other form of limited is called a draft, and that is where you get a certain number of packs and everybody at the table opens the packs one at a time, and they look at the pack and they choose a card, and then they pass the rest of the pack to the player sitting next to them. And then you pick up a pack from the other person who's sitting next to you. You look at the cards that are left, you pick a card, and you pass that all the way down until all of the packs are drafted. That can be a really fun way to do a limited event. It's different than sealed because in a sealed deck, you have to worry about the distribution of the cards as they are collated into the packs. With a draft, you don't have to worry about that because you are picking the cards from collectively everybody's packs. So the composition of your deck is a lot different than it normally would be. There's a couple different problems when it comes to draft style or even sealed style limited events in Lorcana. You know, we talk about other card games sometimes. Obviously, I come from Magic. I know of other card games, but I have very limited knowledge. I have very limited knowledge when it comes to other card games. I have almost no knowledge when it comes to other card games' version of limited formats, except for Magic the Gathering. So with Magic, a draft is three booster packs. With Magic and with three booster packs, you are going to end up with 45 cards because there are 15 cards in a pack.
Mm-hmm.
In Magic, though, you have the land system, which, you know, you have to have lands in order to cast your spells. And those do not need to be drafted. Those come from the store. The store will typically have, or the tournament will typically have, a pile of basic lands that you can pull from to add to your limited deck. And the basic rule is that you draft 45 cards, but your deck is only going to contain 23 of those cards on average. So 17 of those cards are going to be lands that don't come from your draft pool. So you have a lot of space when you're drafting with Magic. You also are not going to use all 45 of your cards because some of them might not be the proper color that your deck is. Because unlike in Lorcana, you have to worry about the color during the game, because different lands will produce different colors, and you can only cast the spell of that color if you have the corresponding land. Lorcana has a couple different points against it when it comes to a draft format. The first thing is that there are only 12 card packs, and you're building a 40 card deck, so you can't do three booster packs because that's only 36 cards. And so Lorcana has added a fourth booster pack, which gives you 48 cards, but because there are no color restrictions, it basically ends up being the eight worst cards. Probably your last two picks from a draft for all four packs. Those are probably going to be the cards that you do not play in your deck. And that, I feel, does not make for very compelling gameplay. It doesn't make for very compelling drafting. There's not a lot of decisions that you have to make during the drafting portion. In a way that, you know, in Magic, when you're drafting, you have to choose basically what two colors you are going to be in, and you have to read the signals from the players around you to figure out if anybody else is also playing those colors. And that is a very tricky skill to get right, because you are also signaling to your table what colors you are picking. Lorcana doesn't have those sorts of signals. The booster packs are collated in a way where the commons, I think the commons all have one of each color, right? The first six cards.
Yeah, I think so.
Are one of each color. But again, the colors don't matter. So even if, you know, you open up your pack, you take the rare, one of the rare cards, you pass it over, you get your pack, and you see that the player to your left has taken the Emerald Common, you can deduce that, you can figure that out. The problem is that, what do you do with that information? Like, there's not a lot to do with that information, and so it cuts down, I think, on the skill ceiling that Limited has in Lorcana. And that's disappointing, because I think Limited is a very clean way of contrasting constructed formats. But unfortunately, there hasn't been enough support for Limited in this game to make it a viable alternative.
Have you played any draft specifically?
Yeah. Yeah, I've done a few. And it's not excellent. It feels like bad sealed in a way, because, you know, with sealed, you get six packs, and you're still making a 40-card deck, but you have two additional packs. You have 32 cards that you're not playing in a sealed deck. And so there are decisions to be made in a sealed tournament. But with a draft, there's only eight cards. And eight cards is really easy when there are no other considerations to be made. The main difference that I can tell right now between the two different limited formats, between sealed and draft, is in a draft event, you know, you are curating your deck more because you're actually picking the cards. And that allows you to create synergies in your deck that you may not be able to do in a sealed pool. If you wanted to do an items heavy build, that would be very difficult to do in sealed. You are at the mercy of whatever you open. And, you know, you could have a whole bunch of items and no payoff, or you could have all of the item payoffs, but no items. In draft, you have the opportunity to say, you know what, I want to do the items build. And so you, as you're drafting with your table, you can heavily prioritize taking the payoffs and the enablers as you see fit based on what's in the pack.
So question, what is setting you down a path? Are you going into it ahead of time knowing that there will be items and you're just going to try and be the item person? Or are you basing it off of like that first draw where it's your best card that you're going to pick?
So, and that's part of what makes draft fun. Lorcana already has archetypes built into their color system, right? Mm. You see the overlap of abilities in different colors. So Amber Sapphire has a bunch of healing and healing matters effects. They have a bunch of healing enablers and a bunch of things that say, when you heal, do something. You have Ruby that has kind of this self-damage theme to it. And then you have Amethyst, which has a moving damage counters theme to it. So you could have a Ruby Amethyst deck that is heavily self-damage and then manipulation of damage counters. Or you could have a Ruby Amber deck, which is self-damage and then heal that damage, right?
Sure.
So the archetypes exist. How you would go about drafting it is, you know, in a perfect world, you would open up your first pack. Let's say you're not going for like value, you know,
sure,
like,
yeah.
You want to make the best limited deck that you can. You want to make the best draft deck that you can. So you open it up and you look at your cards and you see, you know, the composition of the pack is that you have one of each color of common, and then you have three colors of uncommon, and then you have two rares and a foil. Let's say that you look at that and you see an uncommon that is the premier items payoff card. I don't know what that would be. You know, it's just a hypothetical, but it is the card that if you were in an items deck, you would want to have and have multiple of. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I gotcha.
So it's your first pack and you look at it and you're like, okay, I'm going to take this card. It's your pack one, pick one. You pass the rest of your cards to your opponent to the right. You take a pack from the person to your left and you open it up. And when you look at it and you see all six commons still there, you see both rares still there and the foil, you know that the person to your left just took an uncommon. And there's not a way for you to know what color that uncommon was, because it could be, you know, the pack just didn't have it. But you look at that and you see, okay, well, they took an uncommon. I know that the uncommons are going to be very, signpost. If you take this, if you see this, this is the type of deck that you should be drafting. They're signaling to you, like the uncommons would be signaling to you, this is the archetype that you should be going for if you choose me, right? So you know that your opponent took one. Let's say you look at that and you're like, okay, there is not an amber card in here. It doesn't mean that he chose it, but it does mean that there's not one in here. But let's say you also see four cards that are of a different archetype. Let's say you see four cards that would be really good in the Ruby Amethyst damage manipulation archetype. You might be tempted to pick up one of those cards because there's four of them right here. But you also have to think about what you are signaling to the person that you're passing this pack to. And so if you take that card and pass three cards that are of that archetype, the opponent to your right, who you're passing to, doesn't know that there was four. They just see that there's three in that pack. And they might look at that and say, wow, there's three of them. That's very uncommon. This archetype must be open. Other people must not be choosing this archetype. I'm going to choose this card. And now all of a sudden, you and the person who's sitting next to you are competing for the same archetype. To answer your question from before, if you go in wanting a specific archetype, that's typically a very bad strategy.
Okay.
You need to read the pack and determine what your pack is allowing you to go into. And also, you need to read the signals of everybody else who's at the table.
Here are my two new questions. One, will you see the same pack again? Like, how many people are in a pod?
Yeah, so there's 8 people in a pod. And so you will see the same pack again only once and at the very end.
Yeah, it'll be picked through. Yeah. Okay. All right. Cool. Good to know. Second question. Are you always going in the same direction?
You know what? Excellent question. Let me tell you how a draft works.
Okay.
You sit down at a table with 8 people. 8 people is a full pod.
Okay.
So you sit down at a table with 8 people. Everybody gets 4 booster packs. 4 unopened booster packs. So we open our first pack. We look at the 12 cards that are in it. Everybody chooses 1 card from that pack and then passes the rest of them, the other 11, to the person to your left.
Okay.
So you're passing your pack to the person to your left and you're getting 11 cards from the person on your right.
Sure.
You're picking up those cards. You're looking at them. You're choosing one. You're passing it down. You're going to do that until the first pack is done. For the second pack, everybody's going to open it at the same time. You're going to look. You're going to choose from one of 12 cards. And then you're going to pass to the right. So it actually alternates each pack.
Okay.
So that's really interesting because that's another depth point to drafting, which is the signals that you are giving in pack one are going to be given back to you in the next pack. So if you are signaling to the person to your left and you say, hey, listen, don't be in items because I'm not passing you any good item cards. If they pick up on that signal, when they're passing to you, you should be getting item cards from them if they have picked up and you have given your signals correctly.
How are you giving these signals?
Well, you're giving them based on the cards that you pick. I don't mean literally, you know, waving flags.
Sure, but the idea of if you've given the signal correctly, like, I don't... If you took the card, you always take the item card, or item-related cards.
Yeah, so think about it this way. If you have a booster pack that has a very bad item, a very good item payoff, and then a pretty good payoff in a different archetype, like the damage manipulation archetype. If you take the payoff for the items, leave your opponent the pretty good payoff for the damage manipulation archetype, they're going to look at that and say, why would they leave this?
Yeah, but they don't know what you did take.
They don't know what you took, but they know that you are not in the damage manipulation archetype at that point. Right?
Unless there were multiple.
Sure. That is where card evaluation comes into it. Because if you pass a card that no one would pass if they were in that archetype, and there's typically not multiple, right? Like, you don't get duplicates.
Sure.
Of commons and uncommons in your pack, right? The first couple passes are gonna kind of be crapshoots because you have 2 rares and a foil that are gonna throw off signals. You are also going to get into a situation where very frequently you are not trying to build the best draft deck at the very beginning. Very, very often people are going to take the legendary if it pops up. People are going to take the enchanted, you know, without regard to how it fits into your draft deck. But at the purest level of draft, so let's disregard the first 3 picks. We no longer have any rares. We no longer have any foils and no possibility of enchanteds. You are left with just commons and uncommons. There's not going to be any duplicates in the pack. And your card evaluation skills prior to drafting, you know, like this is something that you have to learn either by drafting or by studying ahead of time. If you look at a pack, you see your 3 uncommons and you're like, okay, well, there are 3 different archetypes in here. When you pick one, whichever one you pick, the person to your right is not going to have the opportunity to pick that. And if you are consistently picking the same archetype, you are the filter for your opponent. No cards get to that person without going through you first. If you are consistently picking the best card for the chosen archetype, your opponent is never going to get good cards for that. So they should be picking up on the signal, hey, this archetype is not available. Do not be in this archetype because there are no good cards from it. What happens is that you get signal interference when exactly what you said happens, where there are multiple good cards or multiple playable cards for the same archetype in the same pack. And that does happen. But one of you has to pick up on the fact that you're not getting as good of cards as you thought you were. You aren't getting the high quality cards for your archetype that you know exist in this set. Could be random chance. Maybe nobody's opening those cards, but they're uncommons, so they should, you know, they should be showing up. So at some point, you know, if you went in trying to force the items archetype deck and you just are not getting the payoffs for it, at some point during this draft, you may have to decide to switch to a different archetype mid-draft and say, you know what? Somebody else is clearly in this items archetype. They are stealing all of my good cards. I'm looking at pack two right now, and I see a very powerful self-damage card. I'm gonna take that card. And then you get the pack from your opponent, and you look and you're like, okay, there's a whole bunch of self-damage cards in here. I wonder if nobody else is in this archetype right now. And there might be an opening for you. That's the intricacy when it comes to draft. And that's what I think is really fun about draft. I haven't, you know, I'm not perfect at draft, but it's a skill that is not grown anywhere else in the card game. You know, that is an entirely unique ability to have to be a good drafter.
Yikes.
And I think, you know, Lorcana has archetypes currently, but it feels like Lorcana is a constructed first card game where they think about how these cards will affect constructed tournaments more than how they would affect a limited environment. And I think that that's pretty self-evident. I don't know that there's any arguing to be had with that. And if that's their goal, that's their goal. I'm not saying that they're, you know, doing badly at their goal. I'm just saying that I think it would be very cool if they were to focus also on the drafting and limited portion. And I think the easiest way to do that is to really focus on the archetypes of each set. So there are a lot of different color combinations that you can do. You know, with six colors, you can overlap a lot. Just with Ruby, the self-damage ability of Ruby could lead into an Amber healing deck or an Amethyst move damage deck, right?
Right.
You don't have to focus on every single possible combination that could exist. Each set could just focus on, here are five different archetypes. Here are the five different archetypes, and they're a little bit modular with each other, so you can have, because in draft, you can have as many colors as you want, so you could have a Ruby, Amethyst, Amber, move damage, heal damage, whatever deck, and that would be very cool. That type of synergy exists in draft that doesn't really exist in constructed, because the, you know, like the moving damage cards haven't really lived up to their power level. Like they're just not powerful enough. Like we've only seen Bell really see any sort of play. But I think if Ravensburger were to focus more on the archetypes and really, really print cards with that in mind, I think limited in this game could be amazing.
The idea of draft just stresses me out in general. I feel like you have to know, like, you have to have a really good knowledge of the cards going into it. And like, right now for this set, like, I just simply don't. And And right. Like, there's some that I would see that I would be like, oh yeah, okay, well, I've definitely heard about this. But I feel like otherwise I'd be like, okay, so I'm going to take the two rares. Well, you know, I mean, right. in my first right. and my second. Yeah. yeah. Right. And then I'm like, and then I feel lost.
I would say two things. One, I would not feel intimidated by a Lorcana draft, specifically because there are, like, the decisions that you make during the drafting portion are not, what's the word for it? Like, they're not consequential in the same way that, like, Magic draft is. I can see where it, like, the information, like the knowledge gap could be intimidating for a Lorcana draft. The benefit is in a limited context, cards will have like different playabilities. So like think about Scrooge McDuck in the new set. One, you're probably picking him just because he's worth something.
Right? I was gonna say, if you were about to tell me that I should throw it back because I wouldn't have the items to play it. Then I'm like, nah, man, I'm keeping the card that one, I need more of, and two, I know it's worth something.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah. Well, so, but that's kind of my point is, or the cards themselves are very context dependent. So Scrooge McDuck and Tamatoa are not going to be good. In a limited environment, or rather, they're not going to be as good in a limited environment. So, you know, all prices being equal, you would not choose those two cards probably. Yes, you can rare draft, and that's fine. You know, like, I don't know that anybody's going to fault you if you open up a foil Tamatoa, choosing the foil Tamatoa as your card. You have won that draft regardless of how you play, right? Same with any Enchanted, obviously, you know, but the card's playability is all dictated on the context in which it's played in. And in Limited, you basically just have to have a curve. In Limited, you basically just want to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe not even one. And if you play a card on every single turn and then you start playing two cards in a turn, you know, we could get into like the strategies behind Limited formats, because at a certain point they meet again, sealed and limited, or sealed and draft meet again in terms of strategy. But the difference between a sealed tournament and a draft tournament is you are basically building your deck at the same time as you're choosing the cards that go into your card pool, versus sealed, where you open them all up and then decide. Draft has, you know, obviously that time factor to it.
How long do you usually have during a draft to pick your card before you have to pass along?
Well, I mean, at like a local tournament, you know, there's not going to be like a time limit. At bigger tournaments, they might impose like a 1 minute counter, probably shorter, to be honest. You won't need a minute once you get down to the dregs of the pack, where you're not choosing, you're just getting what you get.
Just looking for ink.
Basically, yeah, that would be the Lorcana equivalent of it. In Magic, it's you get four cards, you get the last four cards of the pack, and you just choose whatever is in your color. And then if there's nothing in your color, then you choose the best card that somebody else might want. You know, so there's an aspect to it where it's like, well, I can't play this card, but somebody else might want to play this card. So I'm going to take it so that they can't get it.
Sure.
I don't know that really exists in Lorcana drafting, because in what context are you taking a card for somebody else not to be able to be played and you are also not going to play it?
The only thing I can think of is like a shift target, like the shifting card. Where you're like, I don't have the smaller one, but if somebody else does, then...
That's a very good point. I think that's very interesting. I want Lorcana draft to be a thing. You know, the set championships and the DLCs, they're all just constructed tournaments. And I think it would be very interesting if we were able to have like mixed tournaments where a portion of it is limited, a portion of it is drafting, and a portion of it is a constructed tournament. I think it's very cool as a player to be good at both. You know, it shows that you're kind of a well-rounded Lorcana player. You understand the card game better than just if you were really good at limited or really good at constructed. I think having mixed tournaments would be very cool. But I don't know that we can do that with the drafting format the way that it is, like the state that it's in. I don't know that we could have a DLC that's not a constructed tournament at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, I like I said, I'm intimidated by draft, but the sealed events that we played did scratch a nice different itch for me. Like, definitely flexing some different muscles there. I did enjoy that. I remember distinctly using like a different thought process than the people around me. I'm sitting here looking at these 40 cards, right?
40 cards.
Yeah. So you're having to cut
a lot.
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there. I'm the last one who like is still searching through and deciding what I'm going to be playing with. And they asked me, they're like, having a hard time. And I'm like, yeah, I've got to cut like three more. And and they're like, what? And I'm like, what? And they said, you have 43 cards you want. It was a trial to find 40 cards I want. And I was like, well, we have to have 40 cards. So
right.
I am paring out the ones I don't want rather than struggling to pick the ones I do. Like,
yeah.
And it was very interesting to like have that almost the same thought, but like completely, like coming at it from completely different directions. I just really enjoyed the different way that I had to think, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think it's super interesting because in a limited environment, you are going to be really excited to play certain cards that you would never play in constructed.
Right.
You know? And I think that gives all of these... all of these commons and uncommons that we may overlook during constructed, like deck construction, it gives them a second life. It gives them a different use, you know? And I think that that's really exciting. And it also cuts down on this resentment, I think, that can build over time. You know, we're seven sets in. I've already seen it where it's like, why do we have another one cost 1/3? Like, isn't this just the same card as whatever we had before? And it's like, yeah, sort of. You know, there are different contexts. It has different typings, you know. But, you know, when you're playing in a limited environment, a one cost 1/3 can be really good because it's not going to get banished from your opponent's one cost 1/3 or your opponent's one cost 2/2 or... it can trade with your opponent's 3/1, you know? And so it's these types of contexts that make the cards valuable in a way that they wouldn't normally be.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, you have me wanting to play some sealed events right now or maybe trying draft. But yeah, you've got me kind of excited for the limited format right now. Hey, do you want to like run over here real quick and let's do some pack rush?
yeah. It used to be one of my favorite activities when a new Magic set came out. Nobody would be playing constructed. Everybody would be drafting the first couple weeks because it was like a really good way to get new cards. It was a good way to get familiarize yourself with them. And so for the first few weeks of a new Magic set, everybody just drafted. And I don't see anybody doing that with Lorcana. I mean, I think that there are some in our local area, but not nearly as much as it was for Magic, because I think it's kind of a general consensus that the limited environment in Lorcana is kind of lackluster. which is sad because it's a super fun way to play. I want to see team tournaments.
Did you say teen with an N?
Team.
Team?
Well, like... I mean, a youth league does sound cool too. I would love that.
I mean, you won't have a lot to get out of it. But
no, not me specific, but a TEAM tournament. I think that would be very cool. Like, I kind of want to float the idea to our locals. I feel like it would be a logistical nightmare for a local tournament to try to organize, but the way that I'm envisioning it is you have a team of three people and you have to use all six colors.
Okay.
Across your team.
Because they've definitely done teams, the two-headed dragon, you know?
Yeah.
But you want to...
That's not the same thing as what I'm talking about.
Oh.
So, like, two-headed dragon is like a co-op game. What I'm talking about is you have three people on a team. Everybody has to use all six colors across your team, and then you sit down from another team of three, and each pairing plays their own best of three match, and then a team has to win two of the three matchups in order for the team to win the round.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's not two-headed dragon.
It's very different. But it is super fun because you start making really interesting deck decisions when you have that sort of limitation, where it's like, if you think that the top decks were Ruby Sapphire, Ruby Amethyst, and Amethyst Steel, let's say. But all of a sudden you have two Amethyst decks and two Steel decks. Two Amethyst decks and two Ruby decks. Mm-hmm. So if you, me, and a third person were on a team together and you're like, well, we have to have a Sapphire deck. That Sapphire deck should probably be Ruby Sapphire. It's like, okay. Well, then between the other two, we have to figure out how to divvy up Amethyst, Steel, Amber, and Emerald. And so now it's like, okay, well, Amber Steel is a deck. So if we do Amber Steel, Ruby, or Ruby Sapphire, now I'm left with
Emerald. Amethyst.
Emerald Amethyst?
Yeah.
Which kind of fell out of favor.
Right.
And so it's like, oh, well, is that... Okay, maybe we don't do Amber Steel, but we do Amethyst Steel, and we do Emerald Amber, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that... I like that, where you're like, okay, well, we can't have a bad deck, period. So,
right,
like maybe we can't do Ruby Sapphire. I mean,
right, exactly. Where it's like, okay, ideally we would have a Ruby Sapphire player, but we have figured out that if you do have a Ruby Sapphire, then your other two decks are too lackluster to be viable. And so then you decide, you're like, okay, well, you're going to be Sapphire Steel so that we can build, you know, 3 8 out of 10 decks as opposed to 1 10 out of 10 and 2 5 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go up against a team that decided that was acceptable. And so one of their players is on Ruby Sapphire, but then their other two people did the thing that you didn't want to do, you know?
That sounds cool.
It's super interesting, like,
yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It sounds super cool. I think it would be pretty difficult to try to pull that off on a local level. Like, you would have to I was thinking about it and I'm still considering suggesting it, but I feel like you would have to get a lot of people to commit, like a lot of people to commit ahead of time.
So,
unless you did some sort of like pairing, I don't know, like matchmaking on the day of.
Yeah,
I don't know.
My head is trying to figure out how the matchups would go, like what's the minimum number of people that need to play in order for it to work?
Right. I don't know. It would, I mean, if you figure, I guess like seven teams, but then seven's a weird number, so probably you would need a minimum of eight teams.
Yeah, I was gonna say eight, because if you figure that a normal tournament needs eight and these people are grouped together and must get a certain score in order to move forward, then it seems like right. they're basically like one person. So eight yeah, teams seems
I was,
like the answer.
I was thinking of the number of people where it's like, you know, if we get 21 players to a local tournament, that's a really good turnout.
Yeah.
But we would be requiring to get 24 players, and we'd probably have to do it on like a weekend. And I think 24 players is totally doable.
I think it's doable, but it's also hard because there's a lot of like people who are either individuals or, right. or they are like a pair.
Yeah. Yeah. You would have to, I mean, like you and me, like,
exactly.
I imagine that you and I would be on a team and then we'd have to find a third.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be really interesting to like figure out like, okay, you're going to be on Ruby Sapphire. I'm going to be on Amethyst Steel, which means we have to find an Emerald Amber player
right
within our community who is not already teamed up, you know, yeah. or paired up.
We start recruiting people and only teaching them right. how to play those decks.
Well, I did that. There was a Pro Tour season with Magic that had a team tournament. So the qualifiers, it was like you play in a qualifier at your local store, and that qualifies you to the regional tournament, which qualifies you to the Pro Tour. The local stores were just individual, but then if you qualified, you were qualifying to a team regional tournament because the Pro Tour was a team Pro Tour. And so one of my buddies won one of the tournaments. He took me and another guy. And then for, you know, the time leading up to the regional tournament, we were trying to figure out what the best three decks were. And it had the same rules, sort of. It was you could overlap colors, but you couldn't have more than four copies of a card across your entire team. Me and my friends, like, we could both play green decks, but we couldn't have more than four copies of the same card across both of our decks. And so we were like, okay, well, this is the best deck of the format. Definitively, someone has to play this. This is the second best deck of the format, and thankfully it doesn't overlap. Given those restrictions, we cannot play the third best deck of the format. So what is seat three going to play? And we were like, okay, well, the best cards that are not being played in the other two decks could be played in a theoretical third deck. But then we started playtesting that third deck and we're like, oh, there's a reason why nobody is playing this at normal tournaments is because it loses a lot, even though it has good cards in it, it loses to the metagame. And so then we had to come up with like a different strategy. At that tournament that we went to, we saw people do the exact thing that we had considered and determined not to be good enough. It was like a lot of fun.
Yeah. Wow. Getting some of these other types of events sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And like you said, like filling in some spaces so that it's not all locals. Also definitely want to keep supporting the local game stores, partly just so they keep having events too.
Yep. Yep.
So
I want to support anybody in my community that decides to put on cool events.
Yeah.
Know? All right. Well, thank you for listening to Ink a Podcast, Play a Podcast. I'm going to scrounge up our contact information. The meantime, Amy, you said that you think the next DLC is going to be a Pack Rush DLC. Do you want to go more in depth on that?
Yeah. So, you know, they have so much overproduced Inklands that I think they're just going to have an Inklands DLC.
Yeah. That's a hot take.
Yeah.
That is just a hot take. They're going to do Pack Rush into the Inklands. DLC.
Exactly. I mean, how else are they getting rid of it? I mean, two games, two packs.
It all lines up.
Yep.
Well, I'm convinced. If you want to find more of us, you can find us at incapodcast.com. We are also on YouTube and Twitter and the places at Inca Podcast. We're on Instagram at Inca Podcast Play a Podcast. And we are, you know, wherever you're currently listening to it. If you want to get in touch with us, go to our website. We have our email. Leave us comments. And we'll chat about your comments on an episode, probably, unless they're mean. Even if they're mean, we might address them.
I mean, if they're mean about you, then we'll still talk about them.
I'm going to delete any of the mean comments about you.
If you don't see them. Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, see ya.
Goodbye.
Should we come up with, like, a way to exit, like, and that's my turn.
Ew.